Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, I can't believe it. We ran over time, had one call after the other, and I didn't even realize the time had flown by. So the first thing I need to do is just to find our studio screen. Bear with me a moment. And what I need to do is also call up John Bailey, because he probably tried us before, and yet because I was on the phone, didn't even realize that the time had wandered off, so that's where we were. So we're going to give him a call right now, and hopefully we'll be able to catch him. Okay. All right, so we're running late.
Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA.
I'm sorry.
Good morning from White Plains, USA.
I'm sorry to be a couple of minutes late. One call after the other, and time flew by. I didn't even realize it. You know, I shouldn't be so focused on the call, but whatever. I'm sorry. So, John, you know, we should first tell everybody that you're the publisher and editor of White Plains Citizen at Reporter.com or WPCNR.com. You're also the Monday co-host of Westchester on the Level. And you've had a lot of things that you were covering. One of the most important that you were covering was the proposed tax on cation. But that seems to be pretty inexpensive, an increase, doesn't it?
Well, it is, but it is consistent with the school district policy, at least in White Plains, of compounding of expenses.
I see. Okay.
Yes, the tragedy of compounding expenses is that it always, in order to preserve what you have, it has to increase with the new cost of expenses for the following year. So therefore, the budget never gets cut. And if you do not cut it, the budget will never stabilize.
Well, that seems to be almost like a standard that we find in most boards of education in the state. Certainly,
yes.
In Yonkers, it's been going on all the time.
Yes, but they lose money down there. Just lose it.
Absolutely.
And they can't find it. And nobody really cares to where to find it.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yes.
And they keep on raising costs. And there are so many ways to save money. I am just always in shock that we don't incorporate them. I don't know about you in White Plains, but I know in Yonkers, for example, we're still buying books, which cost an absolute fortune, when we could easily, books can cost maybe $1,000 a kid every time that a new set of books are purchased. They weigh a ton.
One of the leading costs of and profit centers for colleges, for example, are the college bookstores, which were outrageously priced when even I was going to school 50 years ago.
Always, that's exactly the same thing. And it turns out, you know, you could translate everything into a computer, and even the ones that are the Chromes, where everything is done by Wi-Fi. And the point is, you can get a system for $100 a piece. Can you imagine $100? And a computer like that can stay with a kid for an easy 5-6 years. So you don't have to buy them that much. And the biggest outlay is only the first year.
Yes,
one would think. But it's not about saving money. It's about spending and keeping the friends and family network of businesses, you know, in the money. It's pathetic.
Well, and of course, there is the guaranteed obsolescence of your present laptop that you buy for your students in the district. I mean,
right.
About years later, here in White Plains, we are upgrading laptops for everybody through the school system, which I don't quibble with. It's a great program, but it costs money to do that, and they are doing it by...
There's no reason.
Yeah, it's...
There's no reason to buy a laptop because the laptop, it doesn't move along with the process. So, in other words, if you get a Chrome that's Wi-Fi connected, everything is done by Wi-Fi. You can store all the information in your paperwork that you need to do. It's all on the World Wide Web. And the bottom line is it's constantly updated because it's not updated on your computer. It's updated at the source. And, you know,
well,
even school classroom lessons are available online for free. You know, the Khan Academy that's owned by Microsoft, that's for free. And everything is updated. You never have to wait for a new book to be published a year or two or three or five later. You got it right away.
That, you know, it's fascinating that you know this, Hezzy, yet we never hear about this on the school, at this when the school districts talk about their technology upgrades, which are every year, it seems.
Exactly, but that's because they don't want anyone really to know. And the cost of we would save so much money in being able to teach our kids. And you know how expensive it is, for example, you don't want to give a computer every year, or God forbid if it gets stolen, you don't want to be able to be forced to buy another unit for the kid. But do you know how expensive it is really to insure a computer? It costs $35 a year. $35 a year. You know,
yeah, and the kids take it home with them and go through all sorts of, you know, possibility for damaging it. I mean, I damaged my computer by dropping it.
Exactly. We all do. So the point is, that's all very affordable. It's affordable stuff. Even people who have no means and are on some sort of subsidy, that's affordable. You know, maybe we
if you have internet where you live.
But
that's the only caveat. That's
no,
the argument for giving computers to kids.
No, it's not. No, it's
not. Well, that
not
is what we are told.
The point, well, that's what we're told, but the point is you can get fast internet for only $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And you could work that out with, and every Wi-Fi company would, or communication company would want to give it to you because then they'd be the one chosen in White Plains or Yonkers or Mount Vernon or Ossining or wherever you want to look, and they would be the endorsed carrier. And what's wrong with that?
You bring up an interesting point, sort of coming in over there on another freight car sighting in my mind. Remember the connect to the four cities combine their purchasing power to get
correct
them?
I remember.
Remember? Nothing has happened with that.
Because it's all drama.
It's drama, yes, and I mean that was one of the big. Remember when the Westchester County Association made a big deal of that, but that big deal has disappeared into thin air.
They never followed it up. We were supposed to have a system of such high quality internet speed services that would be good for. I think it was Greenberg was involved, Mount Vernon, Yonkers, and White Plains. And I think even New Rochelle.
Yes, yes. And are we the only people who remember these things? What's the matter with the media? You know?
Well, you know what? When you get old enough, that
elephants never forget.
Come of age, we remember.
Yes. I know. One of the real annoyances politicians have is when they're asked about something in the past that they don't want to be asked about.
Correct.
Which they haven't done anything about, but was just trotted out in a news conference years ago. And everybody wastes a lot of space and ink, and you think that governments are making progress. Yeah.
Do. One thing I wanted to ask you about, something else, unless you've got another point you want to make about this, was about Westchester Children's Museum that they're going to build at Playland. Is George Latimer trying to somehow embellish Playland? Do we need all these extras? Is Playland no longer attracting enough people? And do we
well, last summer it didn't, but we had a real rainy weekend type of summer,
yeah.
And that could be... Of course, nobody has actually told us, although they have been asked, how many people actually attended Playland last summer. That figure is
never... Yeah, they never tell.
They, if it's up, they'll tell you, but it was not up. And... And then on Friday, there was this surprise press conference called about just the day before down at the Westchester Children's Museum site on the boardwalk. And they announced about at 1.8 million in matching funds that are going to be invested in putting in the infrastructure in the rest of that bathhouse there that they've converted to the Children's Museum. And this is not going to cost the county any money. This is all a matching grant from the New York Center for the Arts and plus donations from the museum's family of donors and people who have contributed. So that is nice, but this museum has been like, let's see, 9-10 years in growing?
Yep.
Started in at the tail end of the Andy Spano administration.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There's so much interest in this that it's taken them 11 years, and all they have basically is a glamorized play area.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to ask you about one of the most compelling issues that you covered, and that was on People to be Heard. And that was you interviewed Mike Welling of Westchester Biotech Project, and so you spoke to him, and what did you learn from Westchester's biotech resources? And supposedly a European biotech partnership is ready to come in.
Well, they're ready to come in. They want to there are plenty of biotech workers over here to be employed by organizations from Europe that want to partner over here. And not only that, but the various colleges in Westchester, Mercy, to name one, have really got a great deal of science-oriented programs to provide young, employable, competent workers at fair prices, fair wages.
Right.
You know,
this is
not
really terrific, but this seems to be ahead of the curve than what was being contemplated only years ago, where they were building this this structure. I don't remember where they were talking about investing.
The North 60.
We don't exactly know even what they're putting in there yet.
And but that's at least 2 years away. And
right.
Meanwhile, where is the effort on the part of the county to say, we're ready for you now. We have empty space for you now, namely the IBM building up in Armonk.
Absolutely.
That has been fallow for months. And it seems to me really strange that because a lot of these biotech operations are intellectual in nature. You know, it isn't that you need a total massive amount of pipes. That's, for example, faucets. I mean, you know, you and I think of labs, we think of test tubes and the old horror movies, right? But it's no longer like that. A lot of it is done with artificial intelligence, one of the fields that Mr. Welling talked about. And the interview is fascinating because it's as if we have the people, the resources that will appeal to the European research programs that they that they have partnered with, and most of them that he talked about have roots in Westchester. They're ready to come in. But if they don't come in to Westchester, who knows? They could come into New York. They could come into Long Island City. They
exactly.
The point is, this resource is not being advocated in an effective way by those who have touted it as, you know, a growth area for Westchester. That takes planning. It takes coordinating resources and not appealing to special interests that you make deals with.
Good point. Very good point.
That's what holds things up. If you want to make a deal with somebody, then that gets in the way of the higher objective, growth.
It does. Well, that
because
was the other thing that you pointed out
problem.
In your article. Well,
yes.
One thing is that you were suggesting that there are 11 projects in White Plains that are lagging, and that this could be a costly delay. And which just, you know, is like a corollary to what you were just talking about.
Yeah. Well, what the problem is that I went around White Plains at the end of last week and just took pictures of all of the sites that have been targeted and approved for development. And only one has anything going on it, and that is the one on East Post Road and Mamaroneck Avenue, which has taken out an entire block of retail and is going to put up about 400 apartments on that block.
Wow.
With retail at the base. However, they are now ready to construct the buildings, but that could really be a problem for White Plains from a sales tax viewpoint, because you've knocked out a whole block of retail, which had stores in
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Right.
Not a lot, but they were there. And so now the question is, how soon can these other projects get their funding together to start their building? 11.
Good point.
Sites where nothing is going on.
That's
approved project. Which,
And
which,
why is that? Why does that happen? Why do we approve so much before? Is it because they don't have the funding? And it's all, you know, these are all like wonderful stories that go nowhere. Because it collapsed by the time that they ever managed to get funding.
Well, this has
happened. It's over.
This is what has happened over the last 10 years or so. We approve these projects, and once they're approved, it's all being blamed on the recession. But the recession is now 11 years ago.
Exactly. Well, I remember.
I mean, you can't keep blaming. Remember World War II. World War II ended in 1945. By the early 1950s, we were winging away on a really accelerated growth rate. The 50s were perhaps one of the most exciting decades for growth in America ever. And here we are. We didn't have a war. We had a slight recession due to real estate fraud. And no matter how you look at it, that's what caused it. A Wall Street bungle.
Well, what I always find resentful in these deals is that when the projects are passed and authorized to go ahead, what happens is that's the beginning of the process where supposedly funding is supposed to be garnered and gathered. But the real problem is not so much of the process beginning that way. It would be my preference is, well, if you want to build something, then you better have the money to do it on your own. So you want a letter of credit saying that we've authorized your project, and supposedly you could take that letter to the bank, and then the bank will give you money. But okay, if that's the way it's going to have to be, then that's the way it is, but it's really the wrong thing. But more importantly than that is, why is it that we don't define in the contractual agreement with whoever the developer is, well, we'll give you a time frame by which you have to begin the project. So instead of sitting on the property that we've authorized you to develop, you've got, let's say, a maximum of a year or tops 2 years. And then if you don't get it started, guess what? You lose the contract and you owe us money for holding it for you for 2 years. Why isn't that part of the part and parcel of the contractual agreement?
Because until many communities adopt that stance, they can play one community against another. Well, New Rochelle isn't holding us to this standard, so we're certainly not going to make this deal with you, White Plants.
Oh, so again, we're living under the point of a gun and being extorted because we're permitting that. Then maybe it's time for our New York State legislators to pass some legislation so that we can protect everybody's investment. So then if White Plains is the place to open up and invest, then they should go there. But if Ardsley is another good place for an investment, then why shouldn't they also have that same contractual agreement? That should be part and parcel of all contracts authorized by New York State.
Well, there's a story in the New York Times about the tax credits that the Trump administration is about ready to come out with for prize zones across the country, which is going to be an interesting wrinkle in the tax credit game. And they're about ready to do this. And I wasn't aware that they were actually doing something like this. So I'm wondering, how come this hasn't surfaced before? How come there haven't been hearings about this?
I don't know.
It's a big thing. I mean, you're talking about basically regulating the and shaping the hoops that businesses can go have to go through for tax breaks. I can't imagine it's going to be good for the taxpayer, though. Can you?
No, it probably won't.
No.
I think you're very much on target.
Tax have proliferated, and what happens is you go in, you come in with these great renderings, these great demographic statistics of how they're going to fill up and how we're going to have mixed-use retail. This is the mantra of the day, and what happens? They don't have the financing lined up. Retail is reeling from the internet sales, so they are not willing to invest until they see that there's a big market there, i.e. people filling up apartments. And why is it so hard to see how this is beginning to be delayed? It's because it's all based on what they say is going to happen, and they're being consistently wrong, but they are wrong selectively. Like Lennar, which is finally working this first project over on East Post Road and Mamaroneck Avenue, has sold out on building their second building down on Bank Street. But so they're selective there because I think probably, I guess, that this first building is a better one to go with. But companies that get these approvals oftentimes sell the site plan to somebody else. And when you approve a project, you have created an asset, a phantom asset for the person.
But that's the problem. If we have 11 different projects that are approved, when do we begin?
When do we begin? And how many banks are going to finance 11 projects in White Plains?
Good question.
But it's a mind-boggling question.
Well, of course, our railroad station
project has stalled out. We haven't sent out requests for proposals yet, but that supposedly was going to happen in the spring. Well, it's spring solstice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, definitely.
Oh, it's time.
But you know what? Well, you know what's interesting is that there's no way to push government to get these developers to start. And
no.
there's no remedy either. So everyone is held hostage, and they decide on their own.
Yes, we are very solicitous of developers running into trouble getting financing and saying they don't have the money to start right now and the times aren't right. But when people can't pay their rents, when people are down on their luck, we're not too sympathetic with them, are we?
No, it's a double standard, which is
a very big double.
One of the, there's always a double standard.
Right.
Amazing. So,
yes.
Any last minute points you want to make?
Last minute points? No, yes, right. The state of the county message is coming up.
Yes.
April the 7th. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was musing about the fact that nothing much has changed in Westchester County since the county executive took office, except he's done a lot of what I like to call feel-good legislation with not too much teeth in it.
Right, that's true as well.
And we have no decisions on the airport. We have no decision on Playland. And,
no.
You know, these were supposedly really important issues. And we now have a 1% sales tax proposal he wants Albany to adopt to close.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, Cuomo is so mad at the legislature that he may draw a line in the sand on raising sales taxes, too. You never know.
That's a good point. You never know.
And so, therefore, Mr. Latimer, who promised if we get the 1% sales tax increase to close the budget, that he would have a tax moratorium for 2 years. Very convenient. However, he doesn't get it, or he only gets 0.5%. And, and look, there seems to be no end in sight for this, because the governor, you know, held up his right hand and said, this hand will not sign the budget, you know, unless he gets what he wants.
That's true.
And
well,
he's
John,
pretty
stubborn. We've got to get going, but thank you so much for kicking off the day. All the best to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, and
bye.
Song, everyone.
Bye. Thank you. All right. I see we've got Michael Edelman on the line. So good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Hi, Hezzy. How's it going?
It's going well, actually, you know, and it always goes better on Mondays because I know you kickstart the week, you and John Bailey, just a stupendous guest, and I really am very thankful for your input. Well, a lot of stuff is going on. Certainly, one of the things that I don't understand is the Senate voted to end U.S. military support for the war between Saudi Arabia and Yemen. But how does one decide that they want to not support Saudi Arabia, and yet at the same time, does the Senate understand that Yemen was taken over by the Iranian forces and that they were the instigators of this whole thing? Because the way I'm starting to read it, it seems that Saudi Arabia is being now admonished for beginning this war. But
well, the
when
war,
did we get to... Yeah,
it's
go
a
ahead.
Proxy
Sorry.
War. It's a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And and unfortunately, the problem with it is that the civilians in Yemen are taking a beating, and that is what the Senate is revolting against. They do not want to help MBS, who is an autocratic ruler. They do not want to help him kill innocent people. It's that simple.
But I got to ask you, though, you know, that's a very, very strong statement, and maybe you have greater validity in saying it than I would. For example, I know that in the city of Hodeidah, which was the city that was the entranceway to give food That hasn't been done. So, you know, but I don't know whose side is holding off the food from going there. There are over 2 to 3 million people that are on the verge of starvation, literally starving to death. Why is it that we can't move this forward? Why isn't there a United Nations authorization to protect that particular area? Or
I really, you know, that's not my Yemen is not my strong suit, Hezzy. I don't know why there is no United Nations. First of all, Donald Trump is on the side of the Saudis because he's got business interests, and so does Kushner.
Correct.
So they're not making decisions based on humanitarian needs. They're not doing that anywhere. Humanitarian rights are off the table. He is somebody who admires autocrats, whether it's Putin or whether it's MBS or whether it's Kim.
Right.
So the president would just as soon see the Saudis do what they're doing in Yemen because he can't stand Iran. The United States Senate, on the other hand, has other considerations like morality and human rights. And so the Senate has rebuked the president. And they rebuked him. They rebuked him on the other issue too.
Yeah.
On his wall.
Well, that's
his funding.
Absolutely. So they've really become quite emboldened of late. Republicans are joining the Democrats.
Twelve of them. They're not exactly emboldened because everybody else is making an excuse. It's like the monkeys hear
that's
no evil,
true.
See no evil. That's what the Senate's like right now.
Okay. Well, the thing is, though, the president is expected to vote to veto the 54-46 Senate vote, and if that's the case, it's unlikely that the Senate will be able to override him because they need 3/4 of the Senate. So, is this going to be a win for the president?
Well, he's going to claim it's a win, but what he's doing is he's pandering to the fear that people have of immigrants coming to the United States, and he's insisting on building a wall. Most Americans don't want a wall.
Right, that's very true.
How
do we get beyond that? Because that's the big question. How do we get beyond the bias, the racism against ethnic lines and religious lines and so many other divisions that to create this animus between people and certain parts of the world? Is there a way for humankind or humanity to get it together? Because there's constantly this slugfest. Buddhists don't like Muslims. Muslims don't like Jews. Then they don't like Christians, and it goes on and on. And this is the fight.
That's been going on since the Crusades.
Right. Exactly.
First of all, you need examples who are leaders who try to make the world come together.
Right.
That's
so
what
where
you
is
need
that?
First. No, it's missing, isn't it? Donald Trump is not one of those leaders that wants people to get along. He's one of the leaders that wants to divide us. He's one of the leaders that wanted to ban all Muslims from traveling to the United States. He wanted a Muslim ban. He wanted a Muslim registry. And he is absolutely silent in the face of the slaughter of 50 Muslims in New Zealand. Okay,
yes,
so
he was silent.
Donald,
yes.
Donald Trump is not the kind. He's a leader like Duterte. He's a leader like Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
He's a leader like Putin. They thrive on division and pitting one against the other. So when the United States president stops acting the way he's acting, maybe we will make some progress.
In a sense, when we look at past presidents before this one, did they all embody a sense of being above the fray? Was there a morality that is different from past presidents that seems to be completely different when we hear President Trump speak today? He does seem to be more divisive.
Now he's it. First of all, he's sick. All right, it's very clear. If it's clear to Mrs. Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, that Donald Trump is getting sicker, it ought to be clear to everybody in the nation, because he is closer to Trump than just about everybody, because he's sleeping with Trump's number one aide. Now, you don't think he'd say that unless Kellyanne Conway was telling him what's going on in the White House and how absolutely chaotic it is. So you've got a sick president who suffers from sociopathic diseases, including narcissistic personality disorder, NPD, which I told you 2 years ago that he had.
Absolutely.
And he does.
You were
aware.
And
that prevents him from being empathetic. Lacks empathy, delusions of grandeur, can't be wrong, creates a false narrative to make himself look brilliant, keeps talking about how smart he was in school, but sends his lawyer out to threaten the schools not to release his grades. Really?
Right. All of those are true, every last one of it, which is amazing. I wanted to ask you about the tariff war, you know, the war that's between China and the U.S., the U.S. and China. First, it was you know, polar opposites. And when Trump said, well, we're not getting a good deal, we're getting screwed, whatever. And then there was ratcheting up the tariffs. And then there was talk that maybe they would be an accommodation. And now it seems that the accommodation is no longer. It's back and forth and back and forth. The markets are just finding it very difficult to keep up with this back and forth announcements of yes or no. Which way are we going to go? Is America going to lose at the end?
Yeah, I think we're going to lose, because I don't think Trump in the House knows how to negotiate. And I think what's going to happen here is the political pressure from those constituencies that are being hurt by the imposition of tariffs, like, for example, farmers in the Midwest, people who rely on automobile manufacturers, others who rely on Chinese imports or exports, they are going to politically pressure Trump to bail on whatever he thought he could accomplish and settle for a lot less, and then go out and say what a wonderful negotiator he is, when in fact he has no clue what he's doing, as he demonstrated with Kim in North Korea. Doesn't have a clue.
Right.
Doesn't know how to negotiate. So what he's done, he's let his Leitzinger, his trade representative, along with Kudlow, be the pilots of this tariff negotiation. But he'll pull the plug, just like he pulled the plug, by the way, when he was in New York and he was negotiating supposedly all the deals that he was negotiating. All right, he never got what he wanted. He always collapsed.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Very, very true. And yet we've somehow this whole crisis between President and Kim, the ramifications have been lost. Somehow it immediately went off the front pages of media. And as if we've forgotten, and yet Kim is doing what he's going to be doing. And it could blow up one way or the other, maybe not into a war, but certainly.
Well, the issue is whether Kim, you see, there was a deal to be had, in my opinion, that has been overlooked by the media. The deal was that we would remove some of the sanctions, and he would destroy the reactor, and I forget the name of the Korean city. It sounds like Pyongyang, but it's not. And he disassembling one of the reactors. He's only got two. So that would have been a halfway deal, because then they could have both left, and they could have been saying our goal is denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and we've taken the first steps to achieve that goal. Instead, Trump walks out. Kim goes back to North Korea. Kim starts testing again, which he will do. He's reactivated his missile launch sites.
Right.
And now Xi Jinping says, well, why should I go to Mar-a-Lago and suffer the same fate with an embarrassment and humiliation with Trump walking out on me? So the great negotiator can't negotiate his way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, absolutely. Unbelievable. That's the big problem. Well, another thing that was totally unexpected was Fox News' reaction to Judge Jeanine Pirro's comments about one of the recent recently elected congresswoman, Ilhan. And
Ilhan Omar.
Because she was wearing a hijab, you know, a headscarf, and she questioned her loyalty to America.
Uh-huh.
And
all right, so here's the
Did yank her, but we don't know if they really fired her what they're doing with
Jeanine. No, she is suspended. Here's their problem. Their problem is that is un-American. Because it would be the same thing as in the 1920s, an Orthodox Jew comes from Russia with a yarmulke,
right,
and some guy from Kansas says, "You're no American. You are guided by the Talmud and the Halakha. So how could you possibly be constitutional?" So that's why the argument fails. She should have never made it. It's her attempt to appease the guy in the White House. She's got unfettered access to Donald Trump. She hangs out with the children, goes to the party, the family parties. She has a complimentary membership along on Fox. In fact, I think I mentioned this last week, I filed a complaint with the Federal Elections Commission alleging that Hannity and Pirro, by appearing at the political rally for Josh Hawley in Missouri in November of 2018, constituted an illegal in-kind corporate contribution by Fox.
Uh-huh.
And that's
good
what
point.
It was.
I didn't realize.
Okay, so you've got Fox News being state TV. You've got Bill Shine going to Fox. You've got Hope Hicks. I mean, Bill Shine going to the White House. Now he's on the campaign. You have Hope Hicks going from the White House to Fox. You got Sean Hannity president every night. You got Jeanine Pirro hanging out with you got Ingraham, Coulter. You've got all of these opinion hosts are making Fox not a news network. And you know who's worried about that? Rupert Murdoch's boys. His sons.
McLaughlin.
He's 87.
Yeah.
He's on the way out. But when he leaves, the last thing they want is Fox News to not be considered a reliable news network. That's why you are hearing commercials on WVOX, for example, which is a Fox News affiliate, about how wonderful Shep Smith and Chris Wallace are because they report the news. That's an admission, essentially, that the other people don't.
Exactly, yes,
so,
very true.
Yeah, okay, and so they've been running those commercials all over the place to try and bolster the credibility of Fox News as a legitimate journalistic outlet, which it is not.
Right.
It lost. Oh, you ought to read the comments in Westchester County, Gannett, under the story about Jeanine Pirro being suspended. You ought to read the comments of people who live in Westchester, who were familiar with Jeanine Pirro when she was district attorney. By the way, full disclosure, I got Pirro the job in the DA's office that allowed her to turn victim witness assistance into domestic violence. I got her that position. Because when I was leaving to run for Congress, Carl Vigari asked me, who do you want to replace you? And her husband had asked me, Mike, can you please put a good word in and see that Jeanine gets that position?
Right.
And she did.
Yes.
And I ran all her judicial campaigns and consulted also on her district attorney campaigns with her, even though Arthur Finkelstein was her main consultant for those campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very familiar with Jeanine Pirro and her modus operandi. And the fact of the matter is, that she is extremely disappointing. I sent her an email almost 2 years ago telling her she was doing a great disservice to the United States. And you know what?
Yeah.
It ends up that she is. And if
yes,
Fox
it does.
News
it does.
Rehires her or unsuspends her after Donald Trump tweeted the entire weekend threatening Fox News what a wonderful person Jeanine was, they're going to prove that they're state TV. He did more to hurt her than she did, because he is making it look like Fox is dancing to his tune, that he's calling the shots, not the executives at Fox.
Unbelievable. You know what? I don't know if you know I think his name is McLachlan Murdoch, you know, who's now in charge. You know, you really should talk to him and infuse Fox with some real reporting and real commentary that's balanced.
Well,
you never know. You never know. Dream, right?
I have no desire to go on Fox. I would have no desire to go on Fox, because if you go on Fox, you've got to toe the Trump line, and that's as of now, unless you're on the news side. And so if you have an opinion, you can't have an anti-Trump opinion. They'll throw you off the show.
Oh, I see. Okay, so there's no room yet for people like you.
There's no room. There's no room. Juan Williams is the in-house liberal. So they got one guy on the panel. But when Sean Hannity has guests on, he mostly all the guests are sycophants. Same with Pirro.
Yes.
He's got sycophants because Jeanine Pirro doesn't know how to argue.
Yeah.
You know, she's not a debater.
She's
a politician.
Yep, yep. That's what she always was.
If Tony Castro had $50,000 more in two more weeks, he would have beaten her.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. When he was running, absolutely. Unbelievable. Well, I got to ask you about something else. Unexpectedly, there were two missiles that left Gaza and were directed to Tel Aviv. They missed their mark, but it was an unbelievable change in circumstance where now missiles are being flown into civilian populations.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I
believe that was intentional, because both sides are saying it wasn't.
You're right. I don't think it was intentional. It wasn't supposed. It's the way I read it too. Hamas was not the one that instigated it. There may have been some lone wolves or whatever who did it.
Yeah.
But whatever the case is, though, it's not that I'm looking to place blame on anybody. But is there any way in the Middle East, when we talk about Palestinians, we talk about Israelis, is there a way to bring this together, or is there so much animosity in history over time?
No, there's always
There's always.
If the other Arab states, the UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, come to the table and negotiate two states for two peoples with safe and secure borders, and a United Nations or a pan-Arab league which protects both sides against missiles and attacks, and then you establish an infrastructure on the Palestinian side, you have industry on the Palestinian side, you can solve the problem. You can't solve the problem with Bibi Netanyahu as prime minister, because he doesn't want to solve the problem.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue about individuals. You know, a lot of people don't want Netanyahu. Other people do. There are other people that are running for political office, and they might win. So, and Netanyahu is under indictment. So, it's difficult to judge from that perspective. I just remember the good old days when Nasser had the United Nations along the border with Israel at the time. At that time, the Sinai was not controlled by Egypt, but it was controlled by Israel, and that was eventually given to the Egyptians as part of a peace treaty. But the bottom line is, when Nasser said, I don't want you guys here anymore, they packed up and left, and that was the beginning of another war. I mean, how do we guarantee all – there is a historical perspective, and there is, bad blood all over the place, but how do we protect each other from one another and make sure that the borders are eventually secured from a new fight?
That's my point. If you have Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, and other moderate Arab states getting together and saying, all right, enough. That's enough of the fighting. You're distracting from the problem. You're allowing Iran to be a hegemonic presence because it's funding extremism and Hamas and Hezbollah. If these countries step in and say, we recognize Israel's right to exist, we do not want to push the Jewish people into the sea any longer. We want peace and we want economic stability for both sides, and here's how we're going to do it. Then you're going to get peace because the Palestinian people aren't going to want to die because Hamas says you got to die. See, you got the street. It's the Arab street that needs to be persuaded that there's more reason to live in peace than there is to fight Israel. And up till now, the problem has been that the Arab leaders have blamed Israel for the problems that they've created in their countries. When
I've never heard you say that, but I believe that that's on target. So is there any will anywhere at the moment? I mean, is Kushner going to be able to be the one to do it? Because
no,
it doesn't seem he's got that capacity.
No, because Kushner is not a
deep thinker.
Kushner is going to be indicted. He's got a conflict of interest. He got a security top secret security clearance that nobody else could possibly get if they weren't the son-in-law of the president.
Mm-hmm.
The admirals, the generals, the CIA, the intelligence community, Kelly, the chief of staff, they didn't want him to get it. Mattis, they didn't want him to have security clearance, access to our secrets, because he has business interests in Saudi Arabia, China, and Moscow.
And he's vulnerable.
They didn't want him involved.
Yeah.
All right? And Trump overruled his own security folks, and they gave him the clearance. He's not going to have a peace plan that the Palestinians will accept. And, you know, as of today, MBS's powers have been severely restrained.
Yes. Yeah, they have.
So I'm not sure even Saudi Arabia.
Well, absolutely. We're not sure. Oh, one of the things that we needed to look into, it's not something I listed, but the Boeing Max planes, there are two models that are out. Supposedly it's the most coveted airplane, and I think they've sold over 1,000 of them worldwide.
Yeah.
Why did it take so long? Well, there's something evidently wrong with them. Two planes coming down within 5 months' time. Why did it take the United States so long to make a decision, and why did the president usurp that capacity from her name is Chow. She's the one that's in charge.
The transportation secretary.
She's the transportation secretary.
You need to understand that Donald Trump has a personal relationship with the CEO of Boeing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They've known each other for years.
Okay.
And the Boeing CEO called Donald Trump and said, don't do anything, we're going to fix it. Okay?
Okay.
And then every other nation in the world grounded its planes.
Yes.
And we were the only nation that didn't. And the political pressure started on Donald Trump, and he made the correct decision to ground these planes in the United States, rather than catering to the request of the CEO of Boeing, which was out of line because the Boeing essentially has been vetting its own airplanes and going around the FAA. So, you have the other thing on the line here is that the United States has been looked to by the rest of the world for aviation security and for having the best and safest policies regarding the flight of airplanes. The black boxes that were recovered were not sent directly to the United States. They were sent to Paris.
Yes, they were.
And the reason they were sent to Paris is loss of confidence in the ability of the United States to be an honest broker when it comes to airline safety, since Boeing is a U.S. company and the CEO is friends with Trump.
Yeah. Are we making? Are we getting lazy? Is America
getting lazy? We're getting unreliable because of the president of the United States. We're getting unreliable and untrustworthy because nobody knows what the president's going to do, when he's going to do it, and what his motivations are, whether they are personal, financial, or political. So if the rest of the world loses faith in the United States, that's going to set the liberal democratic Western democratic process back 70 years.
Oh, God. Yeah. But it makes a lot of sense. Well, there are too many things to talk about, but there's always next week. So in good health, Michael Edelman, I hope that we'll be able to have you on next week. And thank you so much for just explaining what you do explain. And for being, I was just like a soothsayer. I mean, you noticed all of this stuff 2-3 years ago. It's a mind blower. You know, do you have a crystal ball?
When you think about it, most people knew Donald Trump was a risk. They didn't like Hillary Clinton. And his disease is perfectly obvious. It's very obvious he's got a personality disorder and he's a sociopath. And if you know anything about his business record in New York, you realize that he's a goner, is what he is.
Yeah, he's a thief. Absolutely. All right, Michael Edelman, thanks again. All the best to you.
Okay,
you're welcome. I appreciate it very, very much.
Yep.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Gosh, but so compelling, and that's the bottom line, and so on target. You can't beat, an analytical mind of Michael Edelman, Esquire, just simply brilliant. Well, let's look and see what else is going on. Let's find out what's going on first in the Yonkers Tribune website, and then we'll be right back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. Well, if you want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, you can reach them at their other number as well. It's 347-415-4326, 347-415-4326, and that number will allow you to reach their office. You could text them at that number. You could leave a message. I want to read to you the latest editorial, which is an affectionate term that was dubbed appropriate for me many, many, many years ago. I don't even remember how far ago, because people look to me to write an editorial or perspective on different issues. And then after a few of them were written, they suggested that I rename the editorial the Hezitorial.
which is what I've done, and it's been that way for almost 20 years. So the most recent article that was published yesterday is called "The Bluetooth Series is Protected Speech" by me, of course, Hezzy Harris. So I'm going to read you what I wrote yesterday, and it's taken off like wildfire, but I'll let you judge what's being said. So Yonkers has its own sad cast of characters who simply don't get it. Then again, perhaps they really do, but strictly from one perspective, theirs and theirs alone. Despite their self-serving antics, legal and otherwise, although allegedly more of the latter than the former, their intent is seemingly engaged to undermine the Yonkers Tribune's financial capacity in order to cleanse the online media outlet from divulging their alleged conduct. Conduct that is well known by the Yonkers Police Department, the Yonkers Police Benevolent Association, the PBA, and the Yonkers Captains, Lieutenants, and Sergeants Association, the CLSA, as well as among the likes of Yonkers Police Commissioner Charles Gardner and the Office of Westchester County District Attorney Anthony Scarpino, Jr. Reporting the conduct of public figures, whether members of administrative offices, individuals serving elected office, or departments under the aegis of its mayor, have always been of public interest. This is so the Fourth Estate, which means media, the Fourth Estate can check whether they cling to the tenets of their job description and conform in abidance to and by the law. It is the reporting and telling of such conduct in celebration of its forthright conduct, or the telling of its trashing the parameters exceeded by personal misconduct, that is the purpose and intent of print and digital publications. Anyone be so aloof, or suggest that celebration of good conduct and admonition and warning of conduct that does not abide by expected and defined standards can be dismissed without impunity is sadly mistaken. Yet the wrath of those who intend to silence the public interest by espousing falsehoods, bearing false witness to circumstances that have been told yet have been expressed to obfuscate facts, must recognize that their intent can, is, and will continue to be told, whether it conforms to their personal agenda or not, with as much passion and insight than they are likely to bring to the table, whether by legal means, intimidation of the media, or for any purpose other than informing the truth, as opposed to those who are not averse to perjure themselves before a city that wants to believe those dressed in blue uniforms are meant to protect society at large. No government representative or public figure is immune from public scrutiny, and frivolous, self-serving lawsuits don't and won't scare any legitimate media outlets from reporting the news as it is expressed best by their substantiated and confirmed knowledge, devoid of embellishment, simply the facts and nothing more. Yet another aspect of reporting, often forgotten, but a corollary to stellar reporting, is the editorial descriptive of facts and connecting the dots, often not expressed from the outset, so as to give respected, even not respected, government institutions and personnel a warning that they best consider choosing legal and rational conduct. In other words, to retreat from the audacity of their ploy so that they may engage in a retreat without soiling their individual conduct so as not to besmirch the department, such as by the Yonkers Police Department, the Yonkers Fire Department, among others, to shrink from such warnings so as to maintain a civilized sense of decorum, is to succumb and submit to abrogating one's responsibility as a publisher slash editor at large of the Fourth Estate, whether accomplished in print, digitally, on radio slash podcast. Imagine the unbridled abuse of government where there is no watchdog. Imagine if egregious conduct was not noted and thereby emboldened outliers to continue their extortionist behavior without the people being informed what was happening in their name by people entrusted to serve the city of Yonkers without bias or malice. for almost 6 years, the Blue Truth series of articles have accomplished just that, telling it like it is, no more, no less. The Yonkers Tribune has done so in a measured fashion so as to remind those who lost their way in conforming to departmental protocols by error or purpose that publications such as the Yonkers Tribune were aware, and that now known, before issues get out of hand, conformity to the tenets of employment or elected office best be met. A respectful approach to the alleged misbehavior of Yonkers Deputy Police Chief John Mueller, Yonkers Police Benevolent Association President Detective Keith Olson, and the now retired Detective Brian Moran, previously dubbed the Three Amigos by the Yonkers Tribune, have each filed a lawsuit against the venerable Yonkers Tribune. Yonkers Tribune is no gadfly diversion. It is a knowledgeable, erudite member of the Fourth Estate immersed in serving the public interest to the best of its capacity. It has done so unflinchingly, outing those public figures who erroneously believed they served themselves beyond their station and believed they were immune from public scrutiny or finding their conduct deliberated upon by the acid-tongued bloggers found within the digital pages of the Yonkers Tribune. A lack of attention by and from the Yonkers Tribune uncovered and revealed that which was proven and valid, and thereby caused the likes of Mueller, Olson, and Moran to seek shelter from our knowing and capacity to report. Were the Yonkers Tribune conflicted in its honest telling, we would be superfluous to that of an honest broker of fact, and we would have earned the ire of Yonkersites. Instead, the legal assaults at the Yonkers Tribune are seemingly intentioned to shut us down, sadly leaving Yonkersites bereft and unaware who and by whom they were being played. No one would be held accountable, and the public would be kept in the dark. There would be no justice, because the renegades would be the jury, judge, and executioner. Without protected speech, contempt of the public would run amok, and public figures such as Yonkers Deputy Police Chief John Mueller and his best friend forever, Yonkers PBA President Detective Keith Olson, would have gone undetected by public scrutiny for what has been occurring since 2010, albeit the Yonkers Tribune began its introspection some 3 years later. We were in the dark as much as was the public. These three tough guys used their positions of power to intimidate and crush any police officer of every rank or civilian who dared to speak out over what was occurring within the Yonkers Police Department. Anyone who was thought to be friendly, quote-unquote, with or were thought to be the whistleblowers that informed the Yonkers Tribune were regarded by Olson as cancerous to the well-being of the self-serving members of those dressed in blue. While many have conjured about possible insiders, none have been correctly identified. Further, were any in fact ever identified, even if they were, the Yonkers Tribune publisher would not admit to even one such alleged source. That is because the individuals who did share what transpired to Yonkers Tribune were and remain part of the conglomeration of shared circumstances that have morphed into the telling known as the Blue Truth series. It was Olson who personally directed email to the Yonkers PBA membership advising them that he forbade, quote, talk, end quote, at the water cooler. It was these, quote, civil, end quote, navigators that cast the first stones. Threats, lies, unauthorized investigations, and false write-ups. When City Hall turned a blind eye, they thought they were untouchable and started targeting civilians. Those who were conjectured to have shared information with the Yonkers Tribune were targeted, as were their family, colleagues, and friends. But these guys didn't stop there. They went on to set up other cops to be thrown out of the Yonkers PBA, the union, while collecting their bi-monthly dues and tensioned as payment for each member to be represented by legal counsel. That is, $50 every 2 weeks, equivalent to $1,200 per police officer for legal representation when required by and from the Andrew Quinn Law Firm so as to protect any and all members of the Yonkers PBA. Without United States constitutional guarantees of protected free speech and honest reporting by trustworthy media such as the Yonkers Tribune, the city of Yonkers would have more rogue cops like Neil Vera, who pleaded guilty to perjury. For some of the Yonkers PBA, perjury became the tool by which perjurers got away with targeting people internally and thus building, shaping, and damaging their own reputation. It seems Mueller and Olson conspired to engage their own internal plan, where Mueller and Olson would run the entire Yonkers Police Department by their own debauched conduct, their quasi-law standards, and alternative contrivances and deformities of so-called justice. It seems as though Olson simply intended his membership to pay biweekly dues and become mute and subservient to Olson's latest incoming PBA board. The Yonkers PBA leadership has, in hushed tones, been defined as the worst PBA in New York State. Olson is the godfather who stripped away the Yonkers PBA members of their 207C medical benefits by deceiving his membership to the repercussions the dismissal of 207C would be. It would be recognized to be deleterious to the rank and file when they needed medical attention. The purpose of undermining the PBA membership was to cooperate with the Spano clan. That being the case, the Yonkers Tribune reported that intent. The only media outlet to report the circumstances was the Yonkers Tribune. The Yonkers Tribune was then perhaps too timid to report that former New York State Senator turned lobbyist Nick Spano held and squeezed Olson, his filthy jockstrap, so to gain cash for promotions, transfers, and get out of jail cards. As for John Mueller, he should have used another ruse rather than telling the Yonkers Tribune that he had photos of Keith Olson punching out another member in a bar. What reporter would turn that down? Mueller used that ruse to have publisher Hesiaris await the unidentified person with photos and proof of the conflagration. Instead, publisher Aris was served with a lawsuit. That was followed by a second lawsuit filed by Keith Olson, and only this past Thursday, a third lawsuit, this one from Brian Moran, who is now employed as a part-time investigator for New York State Attorney General Trish James. The lawyer representing the three amigos is Andrew Quinn, Esquire. It seems these guys must have crawled out of the same sewer. Sources within the Yonkers Police Department are well aware of the underhanded actions of these two characters that brainstormed a frivolous lawsuit to get information on sources reporting incidents that the public had a right to know and perhaps other judicial agencies. John Mueller and Keith Olson are not happy campers, but they can blame no one other than themselves for the shady reputation they created for themselves. Yonkers Deputy Chief John Mueller should be more concerned about his day-to-day duties than chasing politicians around about a police commissionership he is not worthy of serving. Throwing a beer fest in your local police precinct and then denying a transfer is a public concern, just like when Keith Olson threatens civilians, viciously attacks them, and then hides behind his union position. Yes, like it or not, free speech is protected by the U.S. Constitution and by the state of New York. That was proven by Detective Raymond Montero in state and federal court. His case secured protected speech for every dues-paying law enforcement officer in the United States. Perhaps Mueller, Olson, and Brian Moran should have put on their big boy pants. If they were going to bend the rules and target civilians and others with the same calls they expressed today, that is, crying foul. What about their reputations, families, and futures? What about the officer that Keith Olson brutally punched? Why, just this past October, the so-called Yonkers PBA union leader savagely and brutally attacked another police employee while off-duty in a bar/restaurant in Bronxville, New York. Is that not a public concern? It is, so the Yonkers Tribune reported it. One has to wonder how competent the PBA union president, Detective Olson, is that he stands erect at a union meeting claiming he has someone's personnel file. Sometimes you have to yank people like these back to reality. Police officers take an oath to uphold state and federal laws. No one is permitted to abridge or bend these laws. No police officer, no matter his slash her rank, is permitted to target civilians and other police officers as they choose. The law does not permit it. Yonkers Tribune and other media are eagerly awaiting to see what will be the outcome from Olson's latest investigation, one of which Olson brutally and repeatedly punched another PBA member in a bar/restaurant in Bronxville, New York. Since Olson's best friend, Police Chief John Mueller, made the complaint on Olson's behalf, we are wondering if he is following the outcome with the Quinn Law Firm. There is too much smoke within the Yonkers PBA, and no one would have to say you crybabies did every bit of it and your tails got caught in a trap. So now you night crawlers attempt to hide from the lights of justice and engage the Andrew Quinn Law Firm to write up what is nothing more than legally frivolous smokescreens. Dear John Hardship lawsuits, the last person that went to a Westchester Supreme Court hearing against Quinn and the Yonkers PBA didn't get a hearing to see the real facts of Quinn's two-inch-thick smokescreen backdrop for Olson. Thankfully, the New York State Court of Appeals of the Second Circuit Court saw very differently that than the Westchester Supreme Court. It appears the Quinn Law Firm has a very close allegiance to Yonkers Deputy Police Chief John Mueller and Yonkers failed union leader Detective Keith Olson. Hold on a second. These two choir boys and now Brian Moran using Quinn again. Then why not report if a PBA member has a legal dispute against Olson or any of his PBA members' board's sheep or refuses to personally use Quinn? It seems the three amigos know that no one gets legal representation unless you personally hire your own legal counsel using your own money. And you definitely won't get the Quinn stamp of approval unless authorized by Olson. Now, if you're thrown out of the union for a number of years, you still pay into the Yonkers PBA Quinn Law Firm, but you have to hire your own legal defense team. Now, that is why news reporting needs to be told, or it breeds corruption in its purest form. Now, what of the reputation of public figures, including police officers and freedoms of the press? Simple. It is news for which the public clamors to know because it is their legitimate concern. After all, it is their taxes that pay their salaries and benefits, and they have the right to know what these public servants are up to. My goodness, I had no idea. That's like a 20-minute read. Well, what are you going to do? Well, let's quickly look at one more thing and see what else is happening on the I guess in the news. So bear with me a moment as I move on to that. Bear with me a second here, and we'll try to get some international news for you. This is another tragedy. Evidently, a manhunt is underway after a deadly shooting in the Dutch city of Utrecht. The head of the Dutch counter-terror agency said there were shootings at several locations in the Dutch city of Utrecht on Monday, today. In a video statement on Twitter, Utrecht Mayor Jan van Zanen said three people were killed and nine injured, three of them seriously. He added that authorities were working on the basis of the incident being terror attack. The shooter or shooters remain at large, and Dutch police said they were looking for a 37-year-old Turkish man in connection with the shooting. The police ask you to watch out for 37-year-old Gökman Tanis, born in Turkey, in connection with this morning's incident, a police statement said. The police later corrected the spelling of the man's name to Gökmen Tanis, G-O-K. M-E-N, and the last name Tanis, T-A-N-I-S. They spelled the first name incorrectly. Well, okay, this is a, then the police of Utrecht had issued a Twitter. It says, the police ask you to look out for the 37-year-old Gukman. Oh, it's with a Matilda on the top, or the umlaut. So it's Gukman Tanis, born in Turkey, associated with the incident this morning at the hashtag 24 Oktoberplein in hashtag Utrecht. Do not approach him, but call 0800-6070. Mm. That's a local police number. So emergency services flooded the area around a busy traffic intersection in the west of the city where the initial shooting of a tram took place. Several shots were fired in a tram and several people were injured. Helicopters are at the scene and no arrests have been made, said police spokesman Just Langshager. Now, the National Anti-Terrorism Coordinator said it has raised the alert level in the Utrecht area to the maximum of 5. The tram, meaning the rail tram shooting, quote, appears to be a terrorist attack, end quote, said the head of the country's counterterrorism agency, Peter Jaap Alsberg, cited the Dutch broadcaster NOS. Security has been increased at schools, mosques, and transportation hubs, including airports, with Prime Minister Mark Rutte describing the situation as very worrying, quote unquote. And security was also stepped up at mosques. Local media showed photographs of masked armed police and emergency vehicles surrounding a tram that had stopped near a road bridge. The culprit is still on the run. A terror motive cannot be excluded, Albersberg said in a Twitter message. He called on citizens to closely follow the instructions of local police, and Dutch police said they were looking for at least one person who might have fled by car. Local media said security was also stepped up around governmental buildings. This is absolutely insanity what the world is going through. And so very, very interesting. With New Zealand that suffered an unbelievable slaughter of 50 people in a mosque, murdered, and another 50 seriously, not all seriously, but another 50 people who were badly injured, of which, of the 50, I think about 36 are still in hospital, and a few are in serious, serious condition. Well, Australian police searched two homes in New South Wales thought to be linked to Friday's shooting at Christchurch mosques, as New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said her government had agreed in principle to introducing tougher gun laws. Australian police have searched two homes and towns on the New South Wales mid-north coast linked to the investigation into Friday's mass shootings at mosques in the New Zealand city of Christchurch. Police said that a search warrant was executed on Monday morning by the state's joint counterterrorism team, the JCTT, at a home in the town of Sandy Beach near Coffs Harbour, and shortly after another warrant was executed at a home in Lawrence near McLean. The Australian Federal Police, the AFP, and NSW police declined to identify the owners of the homes. The primary aim of the activity is to formally obtain material that may assist New Zealand's police in their ongoing investigation, the agency said in a joint statement. They said the family of the Australian man arrested in Christchurch over the shootings were assisting police. Australian media said one of the homes belonged to the sister of suspected white supremacist Brenton Tarrant, who was charged in New Zealand with murder on Saturday. Tarrant, who formerly lived in Grafton in the same region where the police searches took place, has been remanded without a plea and is due back in court on April 5, where police said he was likely to face more charges. Australia is currently assessing risk posed by right-wing extremism, and Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison will on Monday chair a meeting of the National Security Committee, a source familiar with the matter told Reuters. Morrison will be briefed by Duncan Lewis, head of the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation and AFP Commissioner Andrew Colfin, on the local response to the mass shootings, the sources advised. The likelihood of an Australian terror attack remains at probable, quote-unquote, the midpoint of the five-level terror link or threat ranking that was introduced in 2015. New Zealand is expected to tighten gun laws. So New Zealand, a country that has traditionally had very low homicide rates, has been placed on its highest security threat level after its worst peacetime mass killing. 50 people were killed and dozens wounded in the attack at two mosques in the South Island city during Friday prayers. Prime Minister Ardern said on Monday she would announce new gun laws within days after her government agreed in principle to tougher legislation. Within 10 days of this horrific act of terrorism, we will have announced reforms which will, I believe, make our community safer, she said at a press conference. Now, arms dealer David Tipple said the alleged gunman bought four weapons and ammunition online from his Gun City store between December 2017 and March of 2018, but it did not sell him the high-powered weapon used in the massacre. The MSSA military-style automatic reportedly used by the alleged gunman was not purchased from Gun City. Gun City did not sell him an MSSA, only A-category firearms, Tipple told a news conference in Christchurch. Under New Zealand gun laws, A-category weapons can be semi-automatic but limited to 7 shots. Live-streamed a video of a gunman in one mosque showed a semi-automatic weapon with a large magazine round. And Tipple said the online purchases followed a police-verified online mail order process, and the store detected nothing extraordinary about the license holder. Tipple said he supported Ardern's move to reform gun laws as the Christchurch shootings had raised legitimate concerns. Ardern did not detail the new gun laws, but has said she supports a ban on automatic weapons. My goodness, huh? Is this like unbelievable what's happening around the world? Just truly amazing. Well, I see that it's 11:30 now. Evidently, Brazil's Bolsonaro is heading to the United States to strengthen economic and military cooperation. Opposition leader Guaido of Venezuela is touring the country to stir up support. And sorry, one second. And then Trump has issued his first veto. He is overruling Congress on the emergency he describes over the border. So President Donald Trump vetoed a congressional resolution to terminate his emergency declaration over a border wall, striking back at Republican and Democratic lawmakers who opposed the controversial move with the first veto of his presidency. Congress has the freedom to pass this resolution, and I have the duty to veto it, Trump declared in the Oval Office. Now, while Congress is unlikely to muster the votes to override the veto, the rebuke from some members of his own party left Trump politically wounded, at least temporarily, as immigration and his planned wall along the U.S. southern border become a flashpoint again in the 2020 presidential campaign. The bipartisan vote in the Senate on Thursday approving the measure was a slap at Trump over his decision to circumvent Congress and take money already designated for other programs to pay for his barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border. 12 of Trump's fellow Republicans joined Democrats to pass the measure to end the emergency declaration. Before issuing the veto, Trump said that there was a tremendous national emergency, while U.S. Attorney General William Barr said the action the president had taken was legal. The emergency declaration is being challenged in court as an unconstitutional usurpation of Congress's power of the purse. Shortly after Trump signed the veto, the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the chamber will vote on March 26 on overriding it. Accusing Trump of a lawless power grab, Pelosi said in a statement, on March 26, the House will once again act to protect our Constitution and our democracy from the president's emergency declaration by holding a vote to override his veto. As he issued the veto during the Oval Office signing ceremony, Trump was flanked by border officials and people who have had family members killed by someone who was in the United States illegally. The president has said he wants a wall to prevent immigrants from crossing into the United States illegally, and Democrats deny there is an emergency at the border, saying that border crossings are at a four-decade low. Trump thanked Republican senators who voted for his declaration in a Twitter post earlier on Friday. Watch when you get back to your Senate, to your state. They will love you more than ever before, he said. The president made a border wall, a central promise of his 2016 campaign for the White House. He initially insisted that Mexico would pay for the wall, but it has declined to do so. And last year, Trump forced a government shutdown over an impasse with Congress over funding for the barrier. When a deal to prevent another shutdown did not give him the funding he requested, Trump declared a national emergency, redirecting funds that were allocated for other projects to build the barrier instead. So that's the story there. Now, let me quickly look at some other things around the world. Okay, and then Israel has barred a far-right candidate from standing in elections. Israel's Supreme Court on Sunday disqualified the controversial leader of the extreme-right Jewish Power Party, Michael Ben-Ari, from running in next month's elections. Ben-Ari has come under fire for comments he made about Israeli Arabs, which Attorney General Avihai Mandelblit said earlier this month amount to incitement to racism, end quote. The election committee had approved Ben-Ari to run in the April elections, but the opposition left-wing Meretz party successfully appealed the decision to the Supreme Court. The place of people who believe in the superiority of races behind bars, not in parliament, said Meretz leader Tamar Zandberg in a statement. The attorney general previously accused Ben-Ari of, quote, inciting on an ethnic nationalistic basis against the Arab population, quote, and, quote, calling for a violent renunciation of the Arab population's rights, end quote. According to Jewish Power, his disqualification marks the first time a candidate approved by the committee has been banned from standing in elections. In a press conference following the ruling, Ben-Ari said, quote, a judicial junta is trying to impose its laws. It's not democracy. Jewish Power are followers of late racist Rabbi Meir Kahane, who's Kach, which means strength, movement was labeled a terrorist organization by Israel, the United States, and the European Union. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is seen as leading the most right-wing government in Israel's history, brokered a deal to see Jewish Power join with two far-right parties to create a single electoral list. Supreme Court on Sunday approved Jewish Power's second candidate, Itamar Ben-Gvir, to stand in the elections. It also backed a candidate for the extreme left Hadash party, Ofer Kasif, and Hadash means new, and approved the two main Arab alliances, Hadash Tal and Ram Balad. Now, the latter had initially been barred by the Elections Committee over its alleged support for violent resistance. A Ram Balad spokeswoman welcomed the move, describing the committee's earlier ban as a political decision, end quote. A decision that once more did not get beyond the Supreme Court, a decision based purely on the public sphere of the party's ideological platform, she said. Ram Balad is fiercely critical of Israeli policies, particularly the occupation of Palestinian territory. Justice Minister Ayelet Shaked, a far-right politician and ardent supporter of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, slammed the Supreme Court ruling, disqualifying Ben-Ari and approving the parties which support terrorism is a flagrant intervention against the heart of the Israeli democracy. So that's the story there. Now, let's go back and let me just check one other thing. I'm going to go over to Europe very quickly. And then, one second. Two more things we'll cover today. Okay, the first is a French cardinal who's convicted of abuse cover-up is going to tender his resignation to the Pope. It seems that Pope Francis met on Monday with Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, France's highest-ranking Catholic official, who is expected to tender his resignation after receiving a six-month suspended jail sentence for failing to report sex abuse by a priest. The Vatican confirmed the meeting took place within the city-state but did not provide any details. The Pope has previously defended the cardinal, saying in 2016 that his resignation before a trial would be an error and imprudent. Barbarin, who is also the Archbishop of Lyon, was not expected to speak publicly. The 68-year-old is the most senior French cleric to be caught by the to be caught up in the global pedophilia scandal that has rocked the Catholic Church. He said after his March 7 conviction that he would travel to Rome to tender his resignation, which evidently is what he's doing. Okay, so let me just quickly look and see what else we've got going here. Bear with me a second. Something else is happening. And this is intriguing. Russia has marked 5 years. Crimea was annexed, and it's doing so with concerts and flash mobs. It seems that Russian President Vladimir Putin is traveling to Crimea today to mark the fifth anniversary of Moscow's annexation of the Black Sea Peninsula from Ukraine, condemned by the West but celebrated by most Russians. Putin will take part in celebrations in the contested territory, where he's also due to launch a new power station, the Kremlin said. Moscow's 2014 takeover of Crimea was denounced by Kiev in the West as an annexation and led to sanctions against Russia, but it resulted in a major boost of Putin's popularity at the time. In Russia, March 18 has been officially proclaimed the day of Crimea's reunification with Russia. In Moscow, city authorities have thrown a street festival called Crimean Spring that hosts jazz concerts, cooking workshops, and a photography exhibition a stone's throw away. So, up to 10,000 people are expected to take part in a flash mob in the Moscow region on Monday, dancing to the Soviet-era song Waltz of Sevastopol, the Crimean city, home to Russia's Black Sea Fleet. Hundreds are expected to participate in another flash mob, creating the Russian flag in the Crimean seaside resort of Yalta. So that's the story. Unbelievable. Can you imagine? In my mind, it just seems only yesterday, maybe not yesterday, but a few months back, that the Crimea was taken by Russia and ripped out from the underbelly of Ukraine, which is unbelievable. But what I can't seem to believe is that in reality, it was 5 years ago. Can you imagine? 5 years ago. Well, we have one more thing to cover. The Serbian opposition invade a state-run TV to protest President Vučić's autocratic rule. This is interesting. Opposition supporters stormed the national TV station during the 14th consecutive Saturday of demonstrations against what they say is the leader's autocratic rule, as Serbia's president has pledged to defend the country's law and order a day after. Serbia's president pledged on Sunday to defend the country's law and order a day after a opposition supporter stormed a national TV station protesting what they said is his autocratic rule. As Aleksandar Vučić held a news conference in the presidency building in downtown Belgrade, thousands of opposition supporters gathered in front demanding his resignation. Skirmishes with riot police were reported, including officers firing tear gas against the protesters who have pledged to form a human chain around the presidency altogether. So that's the story there. And that's where we are. I'll quickly take a look to see what's going on and scheduled for tomorrow. Oh, fantastic. Tomorrow is Tuesday. We're going to be speaking to Robert Keston from 10 to 10:30. And then we'll be speaking to Lorraine Lopez from 10:30 to 11. And then we'll have on Wednesday as well, we'll have Lorraine Lopez too. So that's the story, and that's where we are. I want to thank you for being with us, as I do every day, Monday to Friday, because it is so compelling to know that you're listening, and that matters a great deal. So that's the story. Let me just see if we got everything right here. Bear with me a moment. Oh, yeah, here we are. So it's time for us to say goodbye. So goodbye.